Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, this is Mark DiCarlo from A Fork on the Road, travel and food podcast, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney. We're coming to you from General Mitchell International Airport in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen.
I knew that was coming. I knew it.
I know, and it became international about 20 years ago when they got their first flight to Toronto.
There you go.
That's all we needed. It's like, yep. General Mitchell, by the way, General Billy Mitchell is from Milwaukee. He was the founder of the America's Air Force.
Is that right?
He was a general in the Army, and the Air Force used to be part of the Army, and then he was like, no, we need to have a separate Air Force, and he got in all sorts of trouble. He got court-martialed.
Hannes Finney, you always have information that absolutely nobody else has.
Or wants to have.
And I appreciate that.
I'm full of useless information.
All right, you guys. Well, we're coming to you here from the airport in Milwaukee because tonight's topic, Mile High Club is brought to us by actor and television host Mark DiCarlo. Mark DiCarlo is here, Hannes.
Oh, my goodness. Mark DiCarlo is here, and he's wearing pants.
Apparently, he is such a handsome guy, and I'm so happy. You know, I've worked with him, Hannes. Did you know that?
Now, on what exactly? By the way, when you said he was handsome, I looked at him, and he's got a mouthful of water, and he's trying not to spit it out
because it's
too much
water.
And it's like, I'm like, is he? Because he looks a little bloated now.
Okay,
swallowed it. He's more handsome now. Okay. When did you work together?
It was a network called Casino Gaming Television, CGTV. You know what? Actually, I don't know why it didn't go. Seems like, why not? It seems like as good as idea as any, you know? Yeah. And we were, I forget. It was a game show, I believe. It was a game show of sorts. We were co-hosts, or maybe we were traveling companions. I did three or four. Wow. We'll talk about it later,
but
he brings forth the topic Mile High Club. And as you know, Hannes, I was a flight attendant for 7 years.
That's right.
So I know about this club. I'm in this club.
Wait, were you in the club while you were on the clock? Were you being
that
paid?
That is the question.
Being paid to service people, and you did not do that? You had sex with a pilot?
Such a great question, because I can't really remember, because I dated two different guys that I met on planes. They were both passengers.
Yeah.
But I can't, what they would do is they would fly around with me. You know, I would have a trip, and this guy I dated at the time, Bruce, he would say, you know, you're going to Seattle. I'll come out to Seattle with you for the night, you know, and he could. He had money, and he did. And so, like, him. And I'm trying to think, in that case, I was working. So now that you mentioned it, I got paid.
But see, that seems difficult, because it always struck me as, shocking?
No, because
I've never been in the Mile High Club. Shocking.
No, because I was in the Navy summer dress.
What the heck? None of us have any idea what the fuck you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about, okay, because when you work for an airline, you have uniforms, right? And when you first begin working for the airline, you have to buy that uniform. It's about $1,500 because it encompasses a lot of pieces, right? There's the single-breasted blazer, the double-breasted blazer, the summer dress, the straight skirt, the A-line skirt, the belted pleat. I mean, I'm just telling you, there was all these different, So even like the winter coat, the umbrella.
There are three or four gags. There's the ball gag. There's there's the gimp outfit.
Yeah. There's the paddle. And anyway, so my point is that depending on what you would buy this uniform, and they would take it out of your paycheck, like $25 a month until you fucking flew for 10 years or something. You would have paid off your uniform. But my point is, if you're wearing the summer dress, it's not as hard as if you're wearing, say, the pantsuit.
Okay, I wasn't talking about access to your love area.
Well, what were you talking about?
I was talking about how do you, when you're in uniform and people are aware that you're working on the airplane, get into the bathroom with a guy and nobody notices.
Oh, well, or pays attention. So, come on, hon. If somebody goes in first, you do a little knock. It's not a big deal. This isn't high tech.
All right.
This is no big deal. Yeah. Plus, like Mark DiCarlo right now is showing us a trick that there is in the airline where you put the pen in the slot and it'll go from vacant to occupied or vice versa. And that's in case there's an emergency of some sort in which you would have to get into the bathroom. Somebody passes out.
Right.
Maybe somebody's trying to smoke in a fire or whatever. And so you can easily get in and out of the bathroom without even a knock.
Right. By the way, all I saw was him. See, you knew, you interpreted his mime.
Yeah.
His mime to me was just, we're talking about sex and his finger just going back and forth and back and forth. And I was frankly a little disgusted.
Yeah, well, exactly. Once again, it looks like he's doing one of those snap purses.
Yes. When my grandma had to get change out. And she'd open that thing up, and I'm like 10 years old going, that looks dirty
to
me.
Gosh.
That looks filthy dirty. But can I borrow that, Grandma?
So Mark DiCarlo and I are clearly on the same page.
Right, right. I'm the guy who from Wisconsin who never had sex in an airplane.
Maybe you didn't fly a lot. Maybe you didn't fly a lot.
There's that. I didn't fly that much. But it never. You know what? I never flew with someone I was actively having sex with.
Oh, I
until
see.
I moved out here.
Mm.
Like I'm flying to Germany to see my mom. I'm unlikely I'm going to pick somebody up along the way. In the 13
You'd be surprised.
Flight.
You'd be surprised. And let me just say this.
But unlikely I would have.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Tan over here. Sure. Sure. He's like, I'm in the game show network. And
Listen, last year I had the opportunity to fly overseas and I flew to Istanbul and I got to fly business class. Now, in that bathroom, it would not be any kind of feat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Plenty of room. I, in fact, at one point, because the flight's quite long, went down to the first class bathroom where there's a shower.
Wow.
That had like a full on, like a bench. So that would be even comfortable.
Wow.
Right. So I think it depends also on the bathroom.
It's like, so when you had sex with a guy in the bathroom and you're working, you're like, you just are doing it so you can say you did it.
Well,
How much fun could you possibly have had?
Okay. First of all, you go to the one that has the diaper deck.
Okay, sure.
Because now you have a shelf of some sort.
Sure.
And also, it's during a point in the flight. It's obviously like a cross-country flight, more time involved, in which, as a flight attendant, there's some downtime, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go downtime.
Now I'm offended.
Can I also tell you something, honest? Yeah. I flew so fucking long ago, honestly. When I was a flight attendant, like 1989 to 1997, which I called the good old days because it was pre-9/11, we would fly around with 12 people on the plane.
Yeah.
We'd be in a 737-300, which maybe held
that's
150 people.
That's the information I needed.
And we would be 52 people on the plane.
Now
that would be a full
plane. People into a plane.
Right.
If you're in the bathroom for more than 3 minutes, there's like five people outside knocking on the door. So you don't have time for the stewardess to be having sex with. I'm sorry, the flight attendant.
Again, it depends on the portion of the flight, but that's not what I'm talking about.
No, I understand, but you're saying, there's not that many people on the plane.
I'm just saying at this juncture of the aviation history, my airline, US Air, probably flew to LA 10 times a day. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
8 times a day anyway. Because we would have the schedules. Like the little airline schedules were like our Bibles. We were attached to those little schedules. And you would see all the different flights. Because if you missed one, you'd grab the next or you grab the next when you were non-revving. Yeah. I mean, when you were on your own. But now, instead of 8 flights a day, they probably have 1 a day, if any.
Yeah.
And so they take less flights and they cram the people on the plane. All the flights are full. All the flights are at capacity and all the ticket prices are higher, I should say. Yeah. But at that time we were flying around, especially just to even position planes. There could be 9 people on the plane.
Yeah.
There could be 24 people on the plane.
You had to get the plane somewhere.
But the plane has to get somewhere. So we had a lot of time to screw around. That's my point. And literally, we were screwing around. As you know, we also gambled a lot on the plane. We would.
No, I don't know that.
We'd go back in the galley on the longer flights. We'd go back in the galley, pull the curtain close, take the meal cart, lay it on its side, put blankets on top.
Bend over it.
Smoke,
no, this is different.
Smoke cigarettes, because you could smoke then.
Sure.
And play poker. Good times. I shit you not. A lot of fun. I swear to God, a lot of fun. Some of the flight attendants, this is a long time ago, but there'd be some Baileys would come out, with the coffee. I never did that. I know that you'd be surprised, aren't you?
That is actually, where you drew the line is actually a little
surprising.
Because
my line is usually not drawn. I know.
Yeah.
We'd also do experiments with sodas. We would put like... a penny in a glass of Coke and then a penny in a, you know, glass of this or that and just see what would happen, you know, and Coke would just like
corrode. Kids, this is before iPhones allowed you to be entertained every 5 minutes.
And we used to have magazines on the plane, like stacks of magazines, which they realized later that, you know, on an airplane, weight is fuel.
Yeah.
And said, man, they took those magazines off, especially the short range stuff.
Yeah. And you were opening sodas like you didn't have any inventory where you had to, like, you know, prove that you had sold the soda or given the, you know.
Let me just say this, Hannes. There would be what we would collect money for the headsets for the movies, you know?
Yeah.
$4. Well, this is cash. And now you're flying as a flight attendant.
And you're
for
renting
two,
it. So that's
two,
not, you get it back.
And, well, you're, but the point is you're flying for 2, 3, and 4 days as a flight attendant.
Yeah.
You're on maybe a dozen planes, at least maybe 15 planes, maybe 20 planes. And you're collecting all this money and it's all cash. And let me just say, there's a guy that lives down in Marina Del Rey with a boat and it's called Headsets because a lot of money did not get put into the airline kitty. And I'll tell you something now, most airlines, they just accept debit cards and credit cards.
Yeah.
And I'll bet that number jumped when the cash got out of the hands of flight attendants.
Yeah, exactly.
And it wasn't, that was not just me. That was everybody.
No.
That was everybody.
You're like a cop in a, you know, in NYPD, but it's like, hey man, it's the system, man. You don't want to be the guy that goes to internal affairs and turns people in. You gotta.
So I gotta smoke cigarettes and sit on a meal cart.
Yeah, exactly.
Good times. All right. The Mile High Club, you guys. Before Mark DiCarlo comes on and tells his story, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Story Worthy podcast, and with this kind of quality storytelling, I don't see how you don't want
to. This is good stuff right here.
Yeah, you can go on Instagram. How about that? At Story Worthy. And then, of course, Twitter at Story Worthy.
Wow.
And then there's the
Facebook page. Facebook.
And, of course, our website, storyworthypodcast.com.
And iTunes.
And iTunes is a great place to go over.
Subscribe,
rate, review, all those great things.
Stitcher, SoundCloud, these are both.
Oh my gosh, it's all very exciting.
This is, sorry, I just had an image of you reading a magazine again. Just like, it was like, we're talking about 1,000 ways to hear millions of us and other podcasts. And we're like, I'm bored. Can I do the crossword? It's like, what kind of primitive life did we lead in the 90s?
I never did crosswords. Ever. I was never good at that kind of stuff, that kind of puzzle thing.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, folks, you can also find us at storyworthypodcast.com. And why not join our mailing list? You know how exciting this has been, Hannes.
This is good
stuff. Mailing list is really picking up some steam. You're going to get a short email from me every Monday morning. It's cute, funny, sassy. Nothing in depth.
Nothing. No.
Nothing to be afraid of.
It's like a single page. You're not going to have to scroll. There's no scrolling involved.
No scrolling involved whatsoever. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around because Mark DiCarlo is on his way here. Worthy, we have comedian, actor, producer, television writer, host, and best-selling author Craig Shoemaker.
And I'll be talking about how laughter heals.
That's next time on Story Worthy.
Hi, it's Ileana Douglas, and you're listening to Story Worthy.
Back, we've left General Mitchell International Airport and gone across the street to the Steak and Shake. We're having a steak. Christine's having a shake.
I would never go to the Steak and Shake. I mean, it's not even personal, and it's not money. It just would not occur to me to be hungry and say, you know what we ought to do, Alabama? Let's go over to the Steak and Shake.
No,
she'd say, Mama, stop smoking that stuff in the kitchen. And I'd say, Alabama, mind your business.
Mind your business. I got a card. You're always showing your 9-year-old daughter your marijuana card.
That
going, it's legal.
Is so not true. I don't even know where that card is, Hannes. All right, you guys. Mark DiCarlo is here right now. He's an actor and a television host, like I said. And he's also a travel and foodie expert.
Travel and foodie.
What is this? This isn't a job. This is a dream.
This is a dream. Yeah, you drive around. Yeah, you fly around the country, probably first class, having sex willy-nilly with stewardesses and flight attendants. And
he's not only in the Mile High Club, he's in the 10 million mile club.
He's in the cockpit club. He's in the storage bin club. He's in the fuel depot club. and getting fed
in the galley club. Listen, this is fun. Mark DiCarlo was the host of that show Studs. Guess how many episodes, Hannes?
8 million episodes.
580.
That's
how
a lot.
Impressive is that?
That's pretty
that was a Fox show. I remember that. I remember it so clearly.
Studs.
He was also the host of the Travel Channel's Taste of America. And he's also the voice of Hugh Neutron. That was the father in that television show, Jimmy Neutron. He's also been a game show host for shows like Big Deal, and he was the host of The X Show, which was on FX. I appeared on that show, The X Show.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm going to tell him about it. He's going to forget, but I did. Long time ago, obviously. He's currently, you are a regular on Windy City Live, right? It's a local morning show in the Chicago market. In fact, Mark has been awarded 3 local Emmys for his work on Windy City Live. And if that's not enough, he's also the author of the book Fork in the Road. It's a road trip guide of where to go and eat in America, because this guy, Hannes, has been in over 500 cities in America.
Wow.
And if that doesn't get you in the Mile High Club, you're not flying right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, then you're in like the Stuckey's Club at that point. Stuckey's and
or
Dairy
the not
Queen.
Stuckey's Club, as the case may be.
He works all the time, and you can find him at markdecarlo.com and also on Twitter at markdecarlo. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Mark DiCarlo.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. What a delightful conversation so far. I have been in the General Mitchell International Airport, Milwaukee. I've had to fly sometimes into Milwaukee to get to Chicago. You know, if there's a blizzard or a tornado or something, you fly into Milwaukee and you make that 90-mile drive down 94. As I was listening to all your talk about travel, I realized that travel has been in my life since I was a little kid. My dad was the publisher and the editor of the Official Airline Guide, which was the little book that Christine was talking about that was the Bible of people flying before the internet, because all the airlines had to publish their schedules on paper. And if your flight got canceled or you got stuck in Milwaukee and you had to get to Omaha, you have to look, like it was like a Yellow Pages kind of book, and you'd have to look up everywhere and find that around. He used to quiz us on the tales of the airplanes, the colors of United and the colors of American. So I've been like travel conscious for a long time. And I love to travel because I think it's the best education, and it's a great, great way to meet people. And every part of the country has different foods. And that's what the Travel Channel show is about. And that's what I do a podcast now called The Fork on the Road with my wife. And I've been traveling and eating, and that's what my book is about as well, because the pizza in Chicago is different than the pizza in New York, and it's different than the pizza in Omaha or Miami. And that's kind of the last vestige of regional flavor, pardon the pun, that's left in the country. Everything has kind of been homogenized with Applebee's and the mallization of America is what I call it. And you can still get food in New Orleans that you can't get anywhere else. There's New Orleans restaurants here in Los Angeles, but it's not the same because the grills have been cleaned in the last 3 decades. So it's different. So with that as a backstory, as a prelude, if you will, I was traveling, doing a television show, and I was in New Orleans, my second favorite city in America after Chicago. I was born and raised in Chicago, and I think that's a great place to be, depending on where the calendar is. And I was in New Orleans having a great time, from what I recall. It was Halloween weekend, and I had spent the weekend on Bourbon Street with the guys from Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. They had played a gig there that weekend, and then we're in town an extra 2 days, and there was some cavorting and some goofing around. I have pictures to prove it, and if they ever cross me, I will publish them. So I'm in New Orleans, and I do a thing when I'm traveling. I'm typically a very gregarious person. I mean, I'm talking to you guys, even though you're not talking back to me because your microphones are off. So, and I enjoy walking up to strangers and talking to them. And you know, that's another benefit of traveling. You can meet people that you'd never meet at home if you were on your couch. So, but when I'm on a plane, I don't like talking to people because I lack the social skill to start a little short, pleasant conversation and then kind of shut it off and go back to my own thing. You know, we've all been caught on planes with people that just won't shut their mouths or just smell or are just irritating in one way or the other. And I feel it's easier for me because I lack the finesse and the nuance in my conversational skills. It's easier for me just to not talk to anybody. So I'll wear my headphones all the time, even if there's nothing going on in them, right? Just to kind of quiet things down. And if I, God forbid, happen to be on a plane without a reserved seat on a long haul, I mean, I'll take Southwest to Vegas and I love that. But like, if you get stuck traveling across the country on Southwest or one of the other carriers where you have to sit and then people can sit wherever they want, I've developed I don't even know if I should say this because it's such a good system. I'll get on first because I have lots of miles in most of these programs, and I'll pick my aisle seat and I'll sit there. And then as people start coming in, I'm not well. I'm ill. You can sit next to me if you want. No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm sure. I'm actually headed to the Mayo Clinic, and they say if they can figure out what's wrong with me, they're going to name it after me. So I'll do that charade just to stay by myself. So this particular time, I had been in New Orleans having a good time for 3 or 4 days. I'm sitting in gate C8 at the New Orleans airport. Who knows the call letters? You should know. Come on. Christine, you suck.
O-R-L.
No. O-R-L. No, that's not even close. No.
No.
M-S-Y. Don't know why, but that's what it's Louis Armstrong International Airport. I'm at gate C8, which was, yeah.
I see it now.
Yeah. Yeah. A little too late. Miss, I flew for 9 years. Whatever. So I'm at gate C8, Delta gate at MSY, sitting there. Got my headphones on, actually listening to the Allman Brothers and trying to recoup and rehydrate before my long flight back to Los Angeles. And I see this really hot woman in a little short blue dress standing in the middle of the gate looking all Latina and lost. And I know it sounds crazy, but this is the God's honest truth. I was sitting there and in my head, I actually heard the voice of my recently deceased aunt. She had been dead 6 months at that point. My favorite aunt, my Aunt Cookie. And I heard in my head at this moment, talk to her, which is exactly how Cookie would sound. She grew up and lived her whole life in Chicago and had a very Chicago accent. And she was very funny and silly. And I remember thinking, all right, I typically don't talk to people, but if Cookie thinks it's a good idea, I'll go over and I'll talk to this girl. So I get up, take my headphones out, walk across the thing. And I say, hey, have they said anything about boarding yet? Totally throwing her a curveball. And I've learned since then, she figured, oh, here comes some actor guy who's going to lay a line on me. What's he going to say? So you present and then you back off with something like that. Hey, I'm not really interested in you. You're not that hot. And she fumbled and no, they haven't. And then walked away. I'm like, all right, the seed has been planted. I go back and I sit down. She went and got a sweet potato pie and was gone for a long time. And then right as they started boarding the plane, she showed up again. And as she was walking on the plane, said, oh, Mark, let's try and sit together. And I said, okay, I'll handle it. So she gets on the plane. I waited and I got on the plane. And I was in the exit row. And I had the aisle seat on the exit row. And next to me was this little weaselly Filipino dude. And then like a blonde guy, Midwestern looking guy at the window. Right. So we sit down. I look back and this hottie is 2 or 3 rows back, also in an aisle seat on the other side of the aisle. So I lean over to the Filipino guy and I play the guy card. I'm like, dude, you see that girl back there? Uh-huh. Yeah. I was talking to her a little bit out front. I want to move her up here. I'll upgrade you from this middle seat to the aisle seat. All right. Would you mind? Thinking, of course. He's going to say yes. He goes, what? He goes, come on. She wants to sit with me. I want to talk to her. Just move. You're getting an aisle seat because believe me, you do not want to be sitting next to me if you say no. I already put my bag up on top. And I said, well, it's going to be there when we land. Don't worry about it. No, I don't. I really don't want to. And what do you do at that point? You know, you can't really punch somebody because someone will see you. but it's just such a it's such a raw violation of guy code. If you have even a potential sniff of seeing somebody of the opposite sex or whatever sex you prefer naked, you got to bow out and you take the, you know, you take the bullet for that guy and you pay it forward. You pay the pussy forward, right? No. Evidently, in the Filipino culture, that's not how it works. Now, I'm not saying that all Filipino people are garbage. I'm saying this particular guy, this scrawny, pimply-faced, greasy-haired little bastard who was sitting next to me, him. I'm talking about him specifically. No, I don't want him. And I just look at him, and before I could even say anything, the Midwestern guy sitting at the window goes, "I'll move, no worries." So he gets up, he moves, he starts walking down the aisle. I look over my shoulder and I wave the hottie forward, right? She gets up, she starts moving. He takes her seat, she's moving up the aisle. I turn back and the son of a bitch is still in the middle seat. How clueless do you have to be? Sitting in the middle seat. So I lean in really close to his ear and I say, "Move!" And he literally jumped like you just did. And he moved to the window and the girl sits down next to me and we start chatting and she tells me she used to be an actress. And right as soon as I heard that she was an actress, I was like, "Oh, big mistake. I would have had better luck with the Filipino dude." But she actually said, "Oh, but I stopped doing it because I didn't like the person it was turning me into." I'm like, "Oh, she has a soul. She's not an actress." So we chit chat. We're chitting away. We have a little dinner. We watch a movie. I say that it was our first date. She says it wasn't our first date. So we have a great time on the plane and really hit it off. And we land and I had a car coming to pick me up. And I was living in Venice at the time. She was living in Hermosa Beach. And I offered her a ride home. And she said, "No, that's okay." And I'm like, "All right, that's actually good. She's not a slut. She might be loose, but she's not a slut." She goes, "But here's my phone number." Great. So I call her the next day. And this was October 29th. So I call her on the 30th of October. And I say, "Hey, it's Halloween. Let's go do something tomorrow." She goes, "Okay, let's do that." Then the next day, Halloween morning, she calls me and says, "Oh, I can't go out with you. I think a friend of mine has cancer." And I literally start thinking to myself, man, that is a lame excuse. If you don't want to go out with me, just tell me, right? So we don't go out. I go out with some other girl that night and had a pretty good time. And called her on the way home. And it turns out that she was with her friend. And he thought he had pancreatic cancer. A week later, he found out it was a misdiagnosis and he's totally fine. But at the time, she was very upset. And again, that was another thing. I'm like, "Oh, wow. She's turning down a date with me because she wants to be supportive for a sick friend. That shows good character." So far, we know she likes sweet potato pie. She's not a slut, could be loose, but not a slut. And she has empathy for people. And she doesn't want to be a shallow whore, a.k.a. Los Angeles actress. So we started dating and we eventually got married. And she's from Cuba. Miami is where they go. Spent a lot of time in Miami in the intervening years. And we ended up getting married at an airport. We got married up at the Camarillo Airport, which is about 45 minutes north of Los Angeles. It's a small GA airport, General Aviation Airport. And they have this giant airplane hangar that has all this World War II memorabilia in it. So when we were looking around for a place to get married and nothing was quite right, nothing was quite cool. Everything was just kind of bland, ridiculously expensive, and just kind of not us. And then we were driving and I saw the airport. We drove off the road, went and checked it out. It was just this big empty hangar. And I was like, that is the place. So we brought in, we bring in all the stuff, tables and chairs and the band and stuff. And I called Delta Airlines and I said, "Hey, we met on one of your flights. Send us some stuff." So they sent us 150 bags of the peanuts, 150 bags of the cookies that begin with a B. They're still in our fridge. You know the cookies, I mean. They're, oh man, what's the name of them? They're really special kind of gingerbready oblong cookies that they give you on the plane. Google it. So we got the cookies, we got the peanuts, we had airplane wings for everyone that was at the wedding, and they gave us a couple of Delta posters from New Orleans, and we had a great wedding. And now we've been together 8 years, and married, just had our third wedding anniversary.
Yay! That is very funny.
Isn't it a nice little story? I'll tell you about the Mile High Club. I guess it depends on how you define it, right? My friend Jimmy, do you know Jimmy Palumbo?
No.
Okay, he's a comedian in New Jersey. So Jimmy flies on what he calls it the fag pass, okay? Because his best friend from growing up is a pilot for an airline.
Yeah.
And the guy's wife also works for the same airline. Right. So they both have spousal. She gives it to her best girlfriend. He gives it to his best boyfriend, who is Jimmy, right? But you have to pretend like you're married to the guy. And you fly coast to coast for $25. But you have to get all dressed up in a suit and look presentable. And then they put you in first class and it's great. So this, my friend Jimmy's on a plane. This is a long time ago before he was married. And he has the most outrageously crazy stories, but they're all 100% true. So even because he'll tell you stories where he doesn't look particularly good in them. Yeah. So I believe this story word for word is true. He said he was once on a plane. He was traveling from New York to LA and he's sitting in the first class and the plane's engines start up. And he notices there's like 15 or 20 teenagers in first class, and the engines start up and the kids all start to get really jittery. And all of a sudden, one of them just goes, cock, balls, shit, 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 balls. And he starts laughing, doesn't know what's going on. And they just keep erupting with words.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're proud to welcome members of the Tourette Syndrome. They're going to shoot an episode of Maury Povich, and we're happy to welcome them on a plate. Oh.
So he said he just started joining in. Pussy!
No, that's exactly what I would.
Yeah, exactly. I've had encounters on the plane. I have not had a full-on intercoursal encounter. But so Jimmy is in a suit one night, oh, yeah. Right? He's on a plane. He's standing back by the door talking to the flight attendants. And he says he's standing there in a suit and tie, and some sloppy blonde with a cowboy hat and a little dress is drunk, sauntering down the aisle. She walks up to me. She grabs my tie and she goes, hey, what's your name? He says, Jimmy. She opens the bathroom door, pulls him into the bathroom. And from the moment he said his name to the moment they were naked, he said, was at most 45 seconds. Literally fell into his lap. But he couldn't. He began the intercoursal activity, but did not complete it because it's cramped and crowded and the condom and all this stuff. So he says he's in the Mile High Club. I say no. At that point, you're not doing it for comfort or for, it's just
for the thrill. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
to
I
say
think
that
so.
You did it.
You know, I always remember those guys who would come back to the galley and chat with us because you'd be like, here they come. And you'd see a guy coming and he flew all the time.
Right.
Very comfortable. And I find myself doing that when I'm flying. If I need to stretch my legs, I go back, chat with the flight attendants. It's so different now. Everybody's on their phone, you know, even if it's the Kindle or whatever, but everybody.
And they have to be,
in their own world.
And they're probably hyper of the, you know, and maybe the flight attendants are like security. They're always thinking about security. Like if a guy is coming back there, they're going to be like, we don't, you can't hang out. You can't hang out back there.
Yeah.
By the way, I have to say, cause I obsessively couldn't find the find the cookies, but I did find why New Orleans airport is called MSY.
Oh, great.
Do you want to know?
Yes.
The International Airport of New Orleans was originally named Moisant Field. Hmm. And the MSY identification comes from the airport's origins as Moisant Stockyards. The name given to the land when U.S. aviator John Bevins Moisant crashed into it where the airport was later built.
So the airport,
how obscure is that?
The airport it's is built named on after a fatality.
A guy who crashed
into it.
Before the airport existed, he crashed into the land they built the airport on.
And at some point, I would have known all the city codes because that was one of the tests in flight attendant
My
training.
My dad would quiz us on
would
that.
Would know
too.
Those city codes, exactly.
And I love that he published that,
I hate the word moist. hate that word.
It's spelled, his name is spelled M-O-I-S-A-N-T.
Moistened. I don't like that either.
Probably Cajun.
It's probably French. It's probably Moisson or something
so
like that.
So what do you love so much about New Orleans?
Man, I tell you.
I've only been once, by the way. I love New Orleans.
It's a city that it puts on no pretense. Mm-hmm. You know, here in L.A., everybody's pretentious, mm-hmm. right?
I don't know.
Not everybody, but there's a high percentage of pretentious douchebags floating around. In New Orleans, you can't get away with it. If you're a musician there, you've got to be brilliant because the competition is great. If you're a chef there, you've got to be brilliant because the competition is great.
Yeah, all the food is good.
Everything I ever ate in New Orleans was unbelievable.
Yeah,
you go to some little hole in the wall, you'd be like, this, you know, we just got to eat something. You're like, what the fuck? Who made this?
The gas stations are Zagat rated.
Yeah.
I'm not exaggerating.
Wow.
They're gas stations that have the stickers and they're making poor boys. Everybody makes their own gumbo. It's the most sensate, bacchanal city in America.
And you're not just talking about the French Quarter. You're talking about the entire city.
Everything.
All of it.
Yeah, primarily. I mean, that's where we go. I've been to Jazz Fest every year since the LA riots.
Wow. So that was 91 or 93.
Was it? Whatever it was. I remember I left LA. Everything was cool. I land. I get to the hotel. I turn on the TV and the city was literally on fire.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I go out to the fairgrounds, which is a converted horse racetrack.
Yeah.
Then they get 150,000 people. And I had been watching the news all night. So I was a little rattled and I was wondering if stuff was going to happen. And there's black people, white people, every color of the rainbow crammed together. Everybody's happy. Everyone's cool. And this big black woman comes up to me. I was at the Cajun stage. And she's like, you look like you want to dance.
Oh.
So I'm just dancing with this strange lady in the middle of this muddy field. And we're dancing and hugging. And it was just the complete opposite of what was going on back home.
Yeah.
People are genuine. It's a great mix of blue collar, white collar, artistic community.
Yeah. See, in the word mix, it's like in the South, they've been, you know, everybody's together all the time.
Right.
It's not separated, you know.
No.
I mean, there may be, obviously there was segregation, blah, blah, blah. But it basically, if you live in the South, you have to deal with a whole lot of different races. Sometimes in L.A.
Well, in L.A. as well. We're the minority. Whites are completely the minority in L.A.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
But L.A. is so spread out.
But
there's
so
no
spread out. Yeah,
community.
You can go without, you know, you don't have to interact with everybody in L.A. In a place the size of New Orleans, yeah, you do. You have to interact.
You do.
But it is weird because like what you said, I like that L.A. is mixed because sometimes I go back to Milwaukee and I'll be like, what the? There's like nothing but white people, unless I happen to go to the black neighborhood, in which case there's nothing but black people. And that's it.
Right.
They don't interact. And, you know, no wonder people are like, well, we've got to protect, you know, it's easy to think you have to protect yourself from other races.
So tell me about
ever have anything to do with them.
That's true. And people in New Orleans, there's been, you know, the racial strife and all kinds of problems for years and years. But there's a respect. Seemingly, there's a respect for everybody. And the people, in my opinion, that give the city all of its great flavors, it's the black people. It's the Cajun and the African and the Caribbean people that bring the food and the flavor and the music. And they're the heart and soul of the city. And I think maybe the white community there has over time come to realize that and appreciate that. And for a southern city, it's seemingly very harmonious.
Okay, what's that instrument that kind of goes back and forth like a? It's like on a board,
called a washboard.
It's called a washboard, and you wear it.
Can we just agree that that's a bit overused?
Not in New Orleans.
Interesting.
There are guys, that's all they play down there, and they're famous.
I've seen them like just as a tie. It's like a metal tie.
Well, that's bullshit.
I see.
Yeah.
But you get your sleeves pushed up in the tie. You're like, what's the deal with airline food? It's like an 80s comic.
But the guy that plays with, that played with Ernie K. Doe and the guys that play with Gino Delafosse with the things, they're famous.
Full on real. Yeah. Real deal.
And you can tell if they're good or not. It's that syncopated sort of African-y sound.
Oh, yeah. It's very specific to Cajun music. So here's something we have in common.
What?
John Thomas Griffith.
From?
New Orleans.
That's
well,
right.
Well, he's actually from Texas and then
I know.
From then here in Southern California. But nonetheless,
a band I discovered at Jazz Fest.
Cowboy Mouth, exactly.
Fantastic band.
They are a fantastic band. And to see them live is such an energy and so amazing.
Yes.
And he wrote our theme song, Follow Me.
That's your theme song? Oh, that's a great song.
It's a great song. There we go. How about that?
I actually play harmonica on their two records ago.
I played
on a track two records ago.
On what song?
It was called This Train.
No, I didn't know that. How exciting. I play tennis with John Thomas Griffith.
He's good.
Two times a week or so, yeah. Well, we're quite equal. Do you play tennis?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Have you been to Jazz Fest to see?
I've never been. I've been to New Orleans, but never to Jazz Fest.
You got
to
go during Jazz, and you got to go see the Mouth at the Jazz Fest. My friend Peter dragged me. Elvis Costello was playing, and I'm like, I'm going to see Elvis. He goes, no, you have to come and see this band.
Wow,
and who are they? Never heard of them. They blew my brains out. They were fantastic.
Cowboy Mouth. They're amazing, and when they play, everybody loves Jill. Everybody throws red spoons, mm-hmm. and that's crazy.
Yeah,
and if you never
great hooky pop rock. I don't even know how you describe it.
Well, it's like a good feeling. It's all upbeat and it's loud. I love that. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you something. What do you think about the food from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? That's where I'm from.
What's the big sandwich there?
Permanis.
Permanis. We shot some episodes of the Travel Channel show there. The food there is great. Kind of rich, very rich.
Rich, yeah. Pierogies.
Kind of Germanic and
heavy. Yeah,
I'm going to have to ask heavy, if you've been to Milwaukee with your show at all, because that's where I'm from.
I grew up in Chicago.
Yeah, of course.
I would go to Wisconsin to get beer. I've been to Summerfest.
Summerfest is the best.
20 times. Of course, Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
What's the spy place there?
The
bar there?
Oh, my God. My brain is just gone out of the, not the underground.
I forget. We did a thing on the brats there.
Yeah.
In Sheboygan. Up in Sheboygan.
Sheboygan. Well, Sheboygan. Yeah, but let me tell you something about Sheboygan.
It's not Milwaukee.
Those motherfuckers put ketchup on their brats, and that is bullshit.
What is your favorite food, Mark?
The safe house.
Right.
That's the spy place.
My favorite, it's a toughie. I like me a good Chicago Italian beef, sweet and hot.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to Taste of Chicago out here in Burbank?
Yeah.
Love it. Joe Montagna's place.
Owned by Joe Montagna, yeah.
It's the best pizza in LA.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's Chicago-style pizza. I like
it. It's so thick.
Yes.
It's deep dish pizza.
And their combos are great. The Italian sausage and the Italian beef sandwiches are great. Actually, every Friday, I was going to go, but I could not do it because I was working this morning. I came here. All the Chicago actors get together at noon and have lunch.
That is so fun.
Tell stories and... hang out with our buddy, Danny Breen.
How long have you been doing that?
Whenever I can. I mean, that's been going, Joe's place is...
It's been there 20 years.
Yeah, it's been there a long time.
So now you like LA, right?
Oh, I've been here since college. I mean, yeah. I came out to you. I like it. It's just, I don't, it has turned out that I would say 90% of the people that I've become friends with end up being from the Midwest.
But that's because most people are transplants from the show in show business.
True.
And that's your industry.
But there are East Coast people, there are Southwestern people. I think, right. You kind
of Midwesterners do tend to get together.
Because we
eat
talk.
Heavy foods
right.
and talk.
But,
and we act polite.
Act. Being
yeah,
a keyword.
Yeah. Yeah. Insides our heads, we hate you.
We're
but we're like, oh yeah, that's, oh, that's, oh,
geez. By the way, I
oh,
do
that's
that.
Awesome. Yeah.
I do
that's
that great. All the time with the headphones in without music playing, but just
oh,
so that I can
I
be left
that.
Alone. No, I do that all the time.
Mm. See, I was just going to say about that, that I know we got to, it's like when I used to fly, I used to fly to Germany a lot to see my mom, and that's a 12, 14 hour flight. So that's like, you got to learn how to talk to somebody for 20 minutes, not talk to them for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Talk to them again. Not talk to him for another 4 hours and talk to him right before you land.
Yeah, I can't do it.
It's hard to do.
Hey, here's another couple that met in an airport, Dave and Lee Keckner.
Did they really?
In the Kansas airport. Yeah.
Kansas City Airport.
Kansas City Airport. Yeah.
Lee
was in town for a wedding, I think, and Dave was maybe at a football game or I forget what he was doing there. I forget how that went down, but they met in an airport.
Well, it's easy. But you know what? That's easy.
And then
easy.
They flew together and they sat beside each other because Lee was with her brother and said, switch seats with that guy over there.
And the brother probably said yes.
Of course he did. He wasn't a douchebag
right.
like that Filipino guy that you were up against.
Right. He wanted to get his sister laid.
Right. My wife, Yenny, was also at a wedding in New Orleans that weekend solo. So picking her up was not very difficult.
She was supposed to do our show and had to cancel at one point.
This show here?
Yeah, Storyworthy, when we were over at Culver City. And for some reason, she had to cancel. I think she would love to do it. Yeah, she'd do it. But I think she had to go out of town or something.
She's a big-time voice person.
Look at this, written right there, Mark DiCarlo. Your wife is a big voiceover artist.
She's the female Spanish voice at the Disneyland parks.
I knew that.
Among other things. That's what blows people's mind.
It does blow my mind. Yeah. So that's fantastic. So she just speaks two languages?
Three.
What's her third language?
She learned Italian for our honeymoon. We went to Italy for the...
Wow.
We went to Portugal, but she learned Italian. No, we went to Italy for the honeymoon.
Italian is similar to Spanish, they say.
Si. I'm not saying it was the most difficult, like learning Mandarin Chinese.
Yeah.
But when we were there, people thought she was Italian, you know, because she's Cuban, she's got dark hair.
Yeah.
And I would just stand there and go, see.
Yeah. Just keep nodding your head. And you could also grope her. That would be very Italian.
Right. Grab her ass, slap her around.
Let me ask you something. You were interested in game shows before you became a game show host.
Correct.
You were interested in game shows. Did you join game shows like in LA, like a lot of young actors do when they just, you know, trying to get exposure and stuff? You go on a game show and you...
No.
What was your deal going on game shows?
I was in college and I had no money.
Yeah.
And my goal was I was at UCLA. And I was graduating. I was graduating in January, and in December I applied because I needed money, and I wanted to save up enough money to buy a used convertible rabbit. I wanted to have a convertible.
That's so funny, a rabbit. My girlfriend had a rabbit in college
because it looked so cool. And I coming from Chicago, I was driving a '78 Malibu at the time. I just wanted enough for a used rabbit, so I went on Sail the Century. I ended up...
The Sail of the Century was hosted by Jim Perry.
Lovely man. Just passed away.
Did he?
Yeah, Sean Perry's dad.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Perry's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And I remember there was a loud siren on that show. It would go whoop, whoop, whoop. It was so annoying.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
unless you were playing on it.
Okay, so tell me about it. So then you're playing
on it. So I went and they pick you to be on a contestant. And for every show, there's 10 extra contestants in case something happens, right? So you get to the studio, there's 13 people sitting there. They announce the three people that are going to play. You go down and you play and you wait and you wait. So I went to the studio 3 days in a row and watched 15 shows tape before they called my name on the fourth day. So by the time I got there, I had seen it so many times, and I had done some acting and stuff. So I was comfortable in the studio.
Wow.
And I was just like, let's just get this over with. So the first show I was on ends in a tie between me and the champion. And they ask us a tiebreaker. I buzz in. I get the question right. Boom. I win. Yay.
So you go on to the next day.
I did 9 more shows in a row.
Oh,
and
my
I didn't
God.
Beat. I beat people by 20, 30, 40 points. Then the 11th show at the end of the 10th show, they say, okay, you've won $70,000. I'm 20.
Wow.
$70,000. You can keep that or you can risk that and come back tomorrow and play for a $50,000 bonus. And I had been killing people. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So that was Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday's an off day. Friday, the call time is at 8 a.m., not at 1 p.m. So I come in tired, freaked out Friday morning. We do the last show. I'm making stupid mistakes. One of the questions I got wrong was, what city would you be in if you were in the loop?
What city is it?
Chicago.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. How did you not have it?
Because I was a morning. I'm not a morning person. And I guess I had a day to think about what I had done. So it gets to the end of the show. Da, 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 da. Boom. Time is up. We have a tie. I thought it was a tie with the other two players. It was a tie with me and this woman next to me. And then Jim reads the question. An Indian woman named Sacagawea led and she buzzed in and said
Pocahontas.
And she
said the wrong answer.
She did.
Yes.
So I backed in to $115,000.
Because she gave the wrong answer.
Yeah. And she was cocky every day.
Did you have to give the right answer or just she got it wrong?
She got it wrong and she lost 5 points.
Yeah.
But she came up to me in the cafeteria that day and I was very nice. But I had been rolling through. No one wanted to play me because I was just, you know, sometimes you're in the zone. Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to take you down today.
Jesus. Really?
And at points she was leading throughout the game and she started buying things. And I just thought, ooh, that's awfully cocky.
Yeah.
Because you don't, you know, if it was me, I want to win the game.
Yeah.
Right. So she got it wrong. Thank God. And I've got all this money. And then I haven't really had a real job since.
And because I watched the clip and you brought your dad on stage.
He was there.
That was so sweet.
He couldn't even talk.
That was so amazing.
Yeah, it was,
Mark,
great.
That's a big moment. You won $115,000.
And it happened. The anniversary of it is tomorrow, March 22nd.
Wow.
What year was this?
That's amazing.
85.
That's when $100,000 meant money.
Right. And I won a convertible Toyota Celica.
Wow. So GTS. You got that convertible
red,
after all.
Oh
no shit.
Beautiful.
What were the taxes after all that?
Oh, I paid about $40,000 in taxes, I think.
Wow. Interesting.
But I remember one day, it takes a couple months for the checks to come. I would go every day. I was living in an apartment building. And one day I opened up an envelope and there was a one cashier's check for $70,549.
That's amazing.
So I stuck it in my underpants and ran upstairs and got my roommate. We went to the bank.
Oh my God. That's fantastic.
I know her mistake literally changed the course of my life. Otherwise I would have had to graduate and get a job and
wonderful story, man.
No,
that's
loved it.
That was the sale of the century.
No kidding.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Story Ready?
Yeah.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
The wheel landed on my hometown. Ooh, a story about Chicago? Oh, man, there's so many to tell. Okay, I'm in the left field bleachers at a Cubs game, and everyone is drunk and drinking. And we convince one of the people that we're with, who is a major film star now, but I will not use her name, to flash the usher. And but only I said, listen, if this guy gets a home run, you have to do it. If Sammy Sosa hits a home run right here, you've got to flash him really quick. And she had a bra on, but okay, no. So she's rooting that he doesn't get a home run. Everyone else is rooting that he gets a home run. 3-2, two outs. Boom! Sammy launches one over our heads into the street. Everyone's screaming. I'm like, do it. And she goes, wow. The usher comes and grabs her and tries to drag her out. And I'm like, come on, she didn't even take her bra off. And everyone starts chanting in the bleachers, let her stay, let her stay.
That's a perfect Chicago story. Look at that, Hon. It's 1 minute long.
And if you've ever been to Wrigley Field, it's so small that the people on the opposite side of the stadium saw everything.
Yeah.
It's the tiniest place in the world. You
it's
can't believe how
the
small it is.
The greatest place.
I've never seen a game there, but I shot at the restaurant right on the corner.
No, it's not the same.
I'd never been in it.
The guy at home, you're behind home plate. The guy at bat is as far away from you as I am.
Wow.
It's the smallest
place. It's a magical,
place.
Magical,
did you ever go up
place.
And see them? Well, they didn't used to play the Brewers back when you lived there. I guess they played the White Sox.
I haven't been to Miller Park, no.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Zambrano got a no-hitter there.
That's right.
I have not been there, but I've been to Wrigley Field many. I think it's one of the most romantic
places
in the world.
Were you at Old Comiskey Park at all?
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a big baseball fan?
Yes, I am. I'm a huge baseball fan, and Cub Nation is very excited this year because for the first time.
Cub Nation. You say that like, oh, yeah, Cub Nation.
We haven't won a World Series, Mark, since 1908.
I know.
We have
so
it coming.
Is there really a nation? I mean, come on.
Are you kidding me?
There's a nation.
Who is she?
No, she's from Pittsburgh. She doesn't know.
I'm
Pittsburgh.
From Steeler
Pirate
Nation.
Fan. Oh. She doesn't even care about that.
I'm from Pirate Land.
Really? What did the Cubs do in the wild card game last year to the Pirates?
Listen, man, you could talk circles around me.
Who's
because I
pissing
don't,
on the Bucks?
I don't know baseball, but I don't know it.
Yes, there is a Cub Nation.
Okay.
And Cub Nation exemplifies that Midwestern ethic that we were talking about before. We have our hopes are raised and crashed every year, but yet we keep coming back for more.
But you suppress the emotion. So you're like, oh, well, we'll get him next year. But inside you're like, I want to kill everyone in the world right now. But you never say it.
Right.
Never say it.
Do you still have family there?
I do. My Aunt Rose and my Aunt Joanna are there. My cousin Norv is there. I've got some other.
Norv. There's no one in L.A. named Norv.
How do you spell
his name
that?
Is Marv, but we call him Norv.
N-O-R-V?
Yeah, his name is Marv, but he's more like Cliff Clavin and Norm from
Norm
Cheers.
Aunt, so we combine it. That's smart. I like it.
He's a chiropractor who dates Ukrainian girls.
Oh, interesting. Does he go to Russia and date these women, or does he go to the Ukraine?
First of all, Ukraine is not part of Russia
anymore.
I just said,
I changed it. Did you go... Does he go to the Ukraine and meet the women on like a Ukrainian weekend, women weekend?
No, though that's for pathetic guys who can't get laid in America.
Right. Really?
No, Norv goes to Ukrainian Village, which is near the United
Center. There's a neighborhood in Chicago that's Ukrainian. There's a neighborhood in Chicago for everything.
There is.
Yeah.
There is. And there it's good. He likes the pierogies there. He likes the food there. And for some reason, the Ukrainian girls like him.
Yeah. Huh. Well, listen, will you tell your wife, Yenny, to come on the show?
Yes. I've had a wonderful time.
Thank you. You're so sweet.
Now, she really doesn't know shit about baseball, though.
Okay. Well, that's okay. Well, then we won't
talk
about
that. It's not okay for a Cuban.
But wait, don't they play cricket?
No, they don't.
No, they don't play cricket. No. Okay.
Well, wait,
let's just
stop
because it's getting worse and worse.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Avery Pearson, who did sound for us tonight. Thank you so much, Avery. And of course, Sean Merrick and Roddy Swear Engine. Those guys.
Those guys are spirit. Super.
Yeah, they are awesome, man.
And also, of course, you know, John Thomas Griffith, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
And he enchanted our guest at the New Orleans Jazz Fest.
He did, for sure.
And on behalf of you, Mark DiCarlo, thank you so much for coming today.
It was a pleasure.
We really appreciate it. Thank
Thanks for having
thank
me.
You. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host.
Go Brewers!
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
I brought sucks.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.